My name is Neha Sharma. You're listening to 11 O'Clock Comics, and I got my boy Paul Pope here.
And you are listening to 11 O'Clock Comics, and this is Paul Pope. Once more with feeling.
Back to normal. Okay. Yes.
More ways than one.
It's true.
Gang's all here.
Woohoo.
Whoa, that's hurtful.
It's getting a bang. It's getting the gang back together episode. This is Jason's favorite of the year.
Love it. Coming back together. We're like Voltron, Vince, but dude, we're the whack ass three-person Voltron, the three-figure Voltron.
Yeah, we're missing a leg and an arm, but that's okay. Still mighty potent.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk Devastator. You talked Devastator, but I didn't read it when you were talking about it. So I had read it and the new issue, and it's like, oh my God, I hope we talk about it later.
Yes, but yeah, I agree. Because I think, what a masterful handoff artistically.
Oh, well, yeah, we'll get there. Oh, sure. Yes, yes, yeah. We'll get there. And we're going to hand it right off to you, because this is 11 O'Clock Comics episode 914, and I'm Vince B.
You are Vince B. I am David A. Price.
And I, of course, am Joe the Condor.
Nice. You're not Joe the Condor. You're Jason Wood. Look, everybody, it's back. Jason Wood is back.
Wow, Jesus, I'm an it now.
Coming at you.
I gotta
from...
say, our new format of two episodes a week, it's. I feel like I've been gone for a month.
Yeah.
I looked at the tally, and it's like 914. Wait a minute. Did I miss a couple? And it's like, no, I didn't. It's just...
Yeah.
They stack up.
Carousing.
Yeah, and you could stack up. Great. You could stack up.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah, welcome back. You can stack up with a plethora of Marvel hardcovers and graphic novels, because at cheapgraphicnovels.com, one more time for the people in the cheap seats, cheapgraphicnovels.com is currently running a Marvel 50% off sale. I made the mistake of paging through the lists, and I was like, do I need more book right now? Yes, of course I do. So if you want to save on top of the already great discounts at cheapgraphicnovels.com, you can get your OGNs, your trade paperbacks, your omnibus editions. My Micronauts is on its way. And manga, of course. Who could forget manga? So if you want to save like nowhere else, you go to cheapgraphicnovels.com. 50% off, dudes. Marvel, go get it.
Go get it.
And Jason's back, and we're all happy.
Yeah. What up, peoples? Listen, great little trip to Europe. It was fun checking out some new countries. Don't know if either of you have ever been to the Netherlands or Germany, but that's where we were. And I have one regret, which is that Lambic, which is, you know, the quite, at least to some, quite famous comic book store and comic art gallery in Amsterdam. I believe it's the oldest surviving comic book store. It was actually founded in the early 60s, believe it or not. But I was like, oh, it's in Amsterdam. Like, we're going to go to Lambic. And the fam was like, yeah, let's do it. Like, walk over there. It'll be fun. I didn't think to the fact that it's closed on Sundays.
Oh,
so they planned to do it. So, but we were there from Friday and we were there Friday and Saturday as well. So I could have easily gone, but I was like, oh, let's do it Sunday, because we don't have anything on the calendar planned. And
I'd be the same way. If I took my family's time, I wouldn't go back either, because I was like, yeah, I wasted your time. That's more than enough. Yeah.
Yep. All right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have actual libations tonight.
Nice.
Yes, because I'm going to pour a little bit out of both of them. I have some Sam Adams Boston Lager, the good stuff. I'm going to pour out a little bit from both for my girl Trina Robbins, who passed away. Yes.
I'll raise my glass to her as well.
Yeah. You don't reflect until it's too late. It's human nature, right? But after her passing, I thought, damn, this woman has impacted my life tremendously. Number one, designed the Vampirella costume.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yes, number two was in every issue of Comics Book. Marvel then Kitchen Sink magazine that just knocked me, it punched me into another dimension. And I remember her Panther story from the first issue thinking, oh my God, this character's titties are out. And I'm like, I love this. This is the best thing ever. Yeah. And I just, followed her many, meanderings in her career. I can't profess to have purchased everything she ever worked on, but man, the woman was up there. Like, there's Jack and there's, yeah, there's Stan. And a couple notches down, I got to put Trina Robbins in there. Maybe above, maybe below Jim Warren, because the woman just touched me from a very young age, and she was always there. So, rest in peace, Trina Robbins.
Respect. Okay, yeah. Yeah, admittedly, I mean, as I said, I didn't know that she did the Vampirella stuff, so that kind of speaks to, I just know her more as a, like, conceptual. Like, I know her... the name, but I didn't really have much of a connection to her work, at least overtly, that you did. But yeah, respect for the that's a nice little tribute there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to be honest. Designing the costume is one thing, and then it was handed off to Jose Gonzalez, and they did what they, and Frazetta, and they did what they did with it and made it iconic. So props for that. But it was really the comics book story that just twisted my head around. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So.
No,
the lady, it
absolutely makes sense. Yeah, she's also, I mean, of course, and I know Jason and I have the Tits and Clits collection that Fanta put out last year. She's in that as well. But yeah, I know her mostly from her mainstream work. But yeah, she it's weird. It was a shock, but it wasn't a shock. It was expected based on her age, but still, it's not something that I wasn't expecting to see it when I opened up the internet.
Well, we never do, right?
That's
true.
No, we never do expect it. That's why we always tell you people that if you see, especially an aging comic creator at a show, make sure you go up to them. If you're in the mood, buy something. If not, just tell them what they mean to you. Like, I'm sure you'll make their day.
I mean, we talk about it a lot, but think about the moment you had with Qbert, right? Getting him to sign your arm and like that could have easily never happened, right? Just because you got busy or like, oh, I'll see him again. I was thinking about that. How many OGs do we see at, because we go to a lot of cons and they're at all the cons. And I mean, some we've made a point of talking to, but some are just like, oh yeah, they're always around. And then I think like, well, what if, you know, like,
what if they're not? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's a morbid question, and it's totally off the cuff. What's the age where you're like, okay, yeah, you know, like another, to kind of, as Dap was alluding, like, there's a certain age where you see someone pass and you're like, oh, that's a bummer, but like, respect, like, they've lived a life, you know, like, and I think for me, and you know, there's no science behind this. I just thought of it. The number 85.
That's the number that popped into my head.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I was thinking like 82, 83.
If I make it to 80, 85, I'll be like, damn, I had a good life.
Yeah.
Facts. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I totally don't expect for myself to live to 80. But I'm thinking like, yeah, when I see 85, I'm like, man, you've lived your life. Like, good for you. Like,
yeah.
Respect.
Well, in another year.
How old was Trina? I don't even know. How old was she? I don't have any idea how old she was.
Oh, just... she was 85.
There you go. Good life. See? A life well lived. See, my grandfather was like mid-60s when he died. My dad was 59.
Yep.
So I'm thinking if I make it to 60, I'd be like, cool. This is good. But I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean,
fingers crossed, I'll make it to well past 60. But, you know.
Oh, for sure.
And unless my past misdeeds catch up with me.
If you had asked me this question when I was like 20, I might have said a younger number. But now it's like, okay, well, I'm approaching 50. My dad's 74. You know, Beth's parents both passed away already, and they were in their mid-70s. So, and that was a bummer and unexpected. So I'm like, nah, the mid-70s is still – that hurts still. That hurts a lot.
Yeah.
Because you still got young grandbabies probably. You're, you know, you're – it's still a wound, man. So
it is. So Trina was legit. Yeah.
Too legit to quit. And she was working right up until her death, basically.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Just like Ramona, yeah.
Yep, just like Ramona. Ramona was a workhorse, man. She was banging out commissions, dude.
Yep.
Like, for private collectors, literally until the week she passed away. Like,
well, she was crazy. Probably making up the slack from, you know, not having, I would guess, a pension of any kind, right? Right,
yeah.
And maybe some Social Security, like, who knows? But, where the government failed her, she had to pick up the slack, so...
For sure.
Yeah.
And it probably kept her, you know, like engaged. I think she enjoyed it, right? Like probably was like, yeah, it kept her focused and her mind sharp.
I'm telling you, you got to search for those SpongeBob issues where she does Mermaid Mad and Barnacle Boy. They're so good. The strips are just really amazing. And they're probably expensive now because all the SpongeBob issues have risen in price.
Really?
But yeah. Yeah.
Why is that?
Because the print run was not high, just like The Simpsons.
But I feel like SpongeBob has fallen off of the cultural map, though. Like,
I don't know. If you ever wanted to complete a Simpsons run, it would cost you a good amount of money because for the specific reason where the print runs were not that high, especially towards the end. I think like the last issue goes for good money. It's silly.
Huh.
They should all have been reprinted by now. There should be Simpsons Omnibus editions readily available and SpongeBob ones. But I don't know what's up with graining. Like, I don't get it. Meaning why doesn't he make money on all this stuff that he has in the closet? Like, he's got tons and thousands of pages of work that he's not... They reprint them in those really thin... volumes. Like, yeah, we had the Abrams editions, which was great, but those were just the Treehouse of Horror. There's like 250 single issues of The Simpsons that have almost never been reprinted in any form.
Are you just talking about the stuff that's not in circulation, or are you talking about selling the art itself?
No, the actual comic run published by Bongo. They reprint single stories here and there in these, you know, bookstore editions with the die cut covers and the, you know, they're nice to look at, but they're not any kind of comprehensive, extensive reprint of the entire run, there's a shit ton of great work in those books. I mean, yeah, I can go down the laundry list of the artists and you'd be amazed who worked on The Simpsons.
Yeah. So. Well, we know from the two Omnibus, the Treehouse. I mean, the artists that worked on those is phenomenal.
Yeah.
By the way, you started all this as the drink roll call, saying you were drinking tonight, but then I don't believe you told us what you were drinking, did you?
I did. Sam Adams, the best. Sam Adams, Boston Lager. Oh,
you got out there quick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you drinking?
Well, I'm drinking water. So
great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it European water?
No, it's not. It's Deer Park, I think.
Did you?
Poland Spring. It's Poland Spring.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it's Poland's Europe.
We're in the Northeast. Yeah. Poland Spring.
Comment of the night. Poland's in Europe.
There we go.
And I screwed up the red coat talk. I didn't realize I was doing it. I must have said Confederate at one point. Because it's the War of Independence, and because of, you know, the blue and the red, my stupid brain got a little twisted. But yeah, I made a mistake last episode or whenever we talked about the ghost machine. Yeah. Yeah. Dap, what are you drinking?
I am enjoying some delicious, because it was rainy and chilly. So it felt like a good time to sip on some Bardstown bourbon.
Nice. How do you know it's raining and chilly?
Not in Chile and Chile.
Chile.
Jason, you got a lot of catching up to do.
I do. So, Vince, have you heard of a guy named Osamu Tezuka?
I may have. Yeah. I may have. I think, yes.
Rings a bell?
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, you guys know, I mean, we've read and discussed so many comics, and... There's not many downsides to being a lover of comics, but one of the downsides of being into them as long as we have is that, you know, a lot of the things you read, even if they're like baseline enjoyable, they're not like curl your toes because we've experienced so much. It's hard to necessarily like stand out or really excite us. And so when we get something that does raise above that level and actually get us super hyped, it feels great because you're like, oh my God, like you want to share it with everybody. You want to make sure they're all on it like a bonnet. And that's how I feel about Tezu Kami, which I'm sure some of the people listening already know, but Tezu Kami is a 2-volume, 300-ish page manga that is being released through Magnetic of a previously worked on serialized anthology where lots and lots of European artists that loved Tezuka adapted his stories in short, you know, and did short stories based on his different works. And that happened back in what would have been Tezuka's 90th birthday. So I think that's like 6 years ago. And then Magnetic got the license and is bringing all of it over in 2 volumes. The first volume is out. The second one comes out next month. But the first volume is only of the Spanish and French artists who worked on the anthology, which I thought was interesting. So I don't know what the second volume is focused on. But this is so great, and the way they do it is so lovely. It's because they give you a page basically explaining the manga that it's inspired by or taken from, and it'll give you a little paragraph or two about when it was written and what it's about, and you know, what if any comment about what Tezuka thought of it or where it kind of ranks in importance, and then you get the story, and then after the story you get a little one page almost like zine style interview with the creators, depending. Some are written and drawn by the same person, some were had a writer and an artist. And it's just so wonderful because it's like I'm sure Vince has read like everything Tezuka's done, but like I feel like I am a big fan of Tezuka and have read, I guess, the quote unquote most important or maybe most well known work. But like the dude was so prolific. There's so much that he did that I never had an idea. And not only like story wise, but dude, like I think we think of him as being sort of upbeat, and you know, his most famous stories were children's stories like Astro Boy and Unico. But the guy wrote over 700 manga, and he really did do everything from very adult like hella dark stuff, you know, through the Gambit all the way to the children's stuff. And so this Tezu Kami, I was really taken by the fact that a bunch of the stories were not only by manga that are certainly not as well known here in the West as some of his best known stuff, but also they were dark, dude. Like some were fucking crazy. Like, and this first volume has 9 stories. But like the first one, The Mouse, which was written by a creator named Surya, all one word, don't know the and then drawn by Ayako. The original story that Tezuka wrote was about a young girl who is kept in captivity in her home by her family from the ages of 4 to the age of 27. And this manga just chronicles her being trapped in the house until she finally makes her escape. And I'm like, and then this adaptation is like a few days in the life. Like it's this girl and she's I don't know how old she is, but oh, she's in her 20s, I guess, because based on the timeline, but she's, you know, she's in this basement in this like apartment and she's completely oblivious to the fact she's completely like turned her mind off to the fact that she's a captor. But the only visitor she ever gets is her older brother, and he comes and sees her, and they fuck, which is super like off putting. Like I'm like, damn, Tezuka was doing incest comics in the 70s. Like, what? My guy was fearless. But you know, it was like a really dark, you know, Black Mirror, Twilight Zone kind of a vibe. And yeah, it just goes from there. But the creators, every bit of the art is just jaw dropping. And some of the artists I knew well, but going into this, some I did not. Matthew Bublé does a story called The Curse based on Metropolis. And I'm telling you, I cannot fathom how many lines he puts in these panels. It's ridiculous. Like, it must have taken Bublé like 2 years to draw the short story. It's ridiculous. Like, but our boy Victor Santos writes and draws one story, and then writes another story with Belen Ortega doing the art. Another Magnetic staple, J.D. Morvan, writes one of the stories based on Midnight. It's just amazing. It really is amazing. And again, it's not like the stories themselves are cool, but the whole package, the whole presentation is just fantastic. Like I said, we've got another volume coming, and I cannot imagine this not being my favorite anthology of the year. Wow. Because I don't like it's just I thought it was impeccable. Really, honestly, it was just impeccable. A true love letter to a creator that I feel like a lot of folks should know more about, because I mean, he drew over 150,000 pages in his life. Like,
wow.
You're an artist. Think about that.
That's
think
a lot. That yeah, it's a lot. A lot. Yeah. Right. But again, they have assistance, but still 150,000 pages. That's a lot. Well, Sim had Gerhardt, so that's an assistant. I kind of shy away from tribute books. I don't know why. Especially one tribute to Tezuka. And when I saw this solicited, I'm like, I just didn't order it. So, but, yeah, that's on me. So now I'm probably going to have to go back and get it. Cause you know, I value your opinion. If you liked it, then I'm probably going to like it a lot. So I'm strange when it comes to tributes, like, and the higher the magnitude of the person being tributed, the less likely I am. Like, if there's a Jack Kirby tribute book, I will not order it. It's just not happening. Unless, like, Scholey and Larson are in it, then I got to get it. But for the most part, I probably wouldn't. But I don't know. I just have this weird wall between me and tribute books. I don't understand
fair.
It.
I mean, hey, whatever floats or doesn't float your boat, man.
And I don't really – it's not a conscious effort. Like, I don't think about it like, oh, no, a tribute book. I must not order this. I just don't get – I just don't buy them. I don't know why. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
We all have our little stupid foibles and
– Oh, yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do.
I know that Jason and I like to I guess reward them because they'll reward us with Magnetic and their Kickstarters. And plus, I've said it before, I'll do the Kickstarter route because either the perks, the swag interest me, or I also just want to make sure that it does get made so that it can make it to preview so other people can get it. This, I held off on the Kickstarter because I just said, listen, I'll just get it when it's in previews. Don't know where the hell my head was that month. But I will be adding. It's on my CGN wish list, so I'll hit Max up for it. But yeah, it's. I knew based on the resume who was in it that it'd be something that would interest me, even though I haven't read a ton of the man's work. I appreciate and respect what he's done, and obviously a lot of creators do. And I did read something recently. I started it when we were down in North Carolina, and I finished it this past weekend because I wanted to get ahead of upcoming Book of the Month selection. So, and not that he necessarily worked on it, but it's based on his work. So that also added the itch to me wanting to read what Jason's talking about, because now I'm kind of I'm in a mood. I'm in the zone to get more of that.
You got the FOMO.
Yes.
Yeah.
It happens from time to time.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I have something excite.
Do you? On it.
Something really good.
Mm-hmm.
Unexpectedly good. It's like the person in charge of this book's of this line suddenly realized that, hey, maybe I shouldn't be writing all these books. Maybe there's writers out there that could. Wait a minute. Should I even say this? Maybe there's a writer out there that can do a better job than I. And that's exactly what happened. The Todd McFarlane Spawn universe is expanding. We know that. We're getting probably a total of 10 books not all monthlies, but we're getting some miniseries, some ongoings, some one-shots. He's really hitting the Spawn universe hard because he saw what kind of money he made off King Spawn and Spawn's universe. So he's like, all right, let's put out more books. But to date, he has been writing the majority of them. Not so with this, because this was written by Erica Schultz. I should say, I don't want to just say written. It's extremely well written by Erica Schultz, especially in comparison to the stuff that came before. Illustrated by Zay Carlos. The color art is by J. David Ramos, Marcello Izzoli, and Mr. Plasencia. It's called Rat City Number 1, and it just came out Wednesday. It feels like Spawn 2099. Now, if you've ever read the 2099 books, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Remember when Spider-Man 2099 came out? This book feels like that universe. It's not a very complex story. It begins in Azerbaijan, and you have this UCN, which is the United Coalition of Nations, this UCN Special Forces soldier named First Lieutenant Peter Cairn. And he's in charge of a team that was sent to eliminate this warlord, which was misappropriating relief funds and supplying the enemy with munitions. So the UCN wanted him out. In Cairn's group, he has a trigger-happy dude named Becker. Becker doesn't like taking orders, and he's very kill-happy. So they barge into the compound. Becker just starts killing people. And Cairn's like, you know, you can't just kill people. Like, don't do that. Cairn has a conscience. Becker does not, right? So the mission goes south, as expected, right? Becker makes off with this item crucial to the success of the mission. And a scorched earth command is issued. And Cairn's Humvee takes a hit, a direct hit. And he loses his legs in the process, right? So 6 months later, the UCN hooks him up with this Pharmatech Solutions, and they supply him with a pair of nanotech legs. Prosthetic legs, but they're infused with nanotechnology, right? So he's in rehab, and he's given it his all, but he doesn't quite perform to Pharmatech's expectations. So they boot him. He's out of the program. He gets a job as a utility worker. He's living in Rat City, this dingy, rundown area of the city. And he's in a deep hole. There's a water main break or something. He's in this deep hole, and this wave of green energy blankets the city, and it's causing a blackout, and people are looting, and there's chaos. It all ties back to Spawn, of course. When Al Simmons closed the dead zones in Spawn, the necroplasm spread into other dimensions, and this is a result of that. This is a dimension in which Spawn's energy permeates the place, and the nanites in the prosthetic legs become infused with necroplasm. And we have an origin story. He can't remove them. He's like, the fuck is going on? Like, I can't remove my legs. Like, this is... And he's getting these flashes, and his eyes are turning green. And you know what that means? He's a Spawn through the energy infused in the legs. And at the very last page of the issue, and this probably set David off, because we do not see the Spawn of Rat City and at all, basically. Only we see him on the cover, and that's it. But on the very last page, Al Simmons makes an ethereal appearance. It looks like he may be a hologram or some kind of digital technology. So the story's not over, but we have a new Spawn in an exciting setting, and best of all, it's extremely well written. The dialogue is crisp and snappy and believable. It doesn't sound forced at all. The art is just wonderful. It looks like a 2099 book amped up about 5 levels with the advent of modern coloring technology and, you know, the digital effects and stuff. It looks great, and I'm so happy. Like, this book was wonderful. What'd you think, Deb?
it looks great. It's a gorgeous looking book. And well written. You loved it a lot more than I did. That's expected, given the the conceit and the source material. While I was waiting for Ace Spawn to show up, it definitely took its time. It did not chat my ass as much as it did in Ultimate Spider-Man, but I will be back for the second issue just to see where it's going. I did read Spawn. Was it 350?
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I know. I read it just for the hell of it, just in case we were going to talk about it, so at least I'd have some context. But
yeah,
obviously that was the first issue of Spawn I had read in years, and I haven't bothered with anything else. Gunslinger, King, whatever the hell else he's got out there. I haven't checked out anything else, but the cover of this and you know, we never judge a book by its cover, but the cover intrigued me, and
it's a great looking suit.
As did the name of the series, I went in knowing nothing, not expecting anything. I wasn't sure if any of these characters appeared anywhere else prior to this issue.
No,
so I was going in completely blind. It threw me at first because I thought I misread it. I thought the opening scene was 2017, and then all of a sudden, like we're in what the hell was it, like 21 6 months later, and I'm like, wait, this is all very futuristic, and then I realized, oh, okay, it was 2107. So yeah, so we're not even anywhere near what's going on today. But no, I have no idea if I don't know if I'll still be around by the time it ever comes, but you know, if there's going to be a crossover that Todd wants to do with all of his titles, then
You can bank on it.
And I'm sure we'll find a way to connect Rat City to that, and whether or not I'll like I said, I mean, whenever that is down the line, but I did dig it.
Well, he has set a precedent with Gunslinger, because Gunslinger was pulled from the past. Why can't this Spawn of Rat City be pulled from the future? So yeah, no, I'm just so happy. I want to give Erica Schultz and John Layman big hugs for upping the ante in the Spawn universe. Yeah, it's a pretty low bar, but they're doing just excellent work on these books, and it's fun for $2.99. They're the most value on the stands. Cardstock cover, 22 plus story pages. Like, how could you pass these up? If you're a Spawn fan, you should just be buying these, because it's not going to break the bank, and you're getting a very admirable high level package. They're not self covers. Right, there's some care in the production of these books, and I'm impressed.
It's crazy that there's three color artists on the book.
Well, there's a lot of color in the book. Jason, did you read Rat City number one?
No, not yet.
Yeah, well, it's on your stack. I know it is.
Oh, it's near the top.
It's fun. It's so much fun. Yep.
I think it's right after I read Carnage, I'm gonna be all about
it. Oh, so I'm guessing never then. Right after you read Carnage? You should read this before Carnage. It's better.
All right, I'll move it up.
All right. Ay, ay, ay. What else do we have?
He's so cute. Where the hell's my list? The one thing I didn't talk about that was going to be my new travels in the last episode that I wanted to make sure that I gave it some time, because it was something that I need to give Tom King credit for. Nobody was looking for, nobody was expecting, nobody was asking for a sequel to the man who has everything. But Tom did a real nice job with Wonder Woman number 7 and kind of doing just that. This issue is just Superman and Wonder Woman in a mall, in an intergalactic mall, looking for a gift for their friend, for Batman. And it has some wonderful, just nice, heartfelt moments. You can definitely feel the friendship between them all. It is illustrated. It's not a fill-in issue. It's a pause on the current ongoing arc in the relaunch title. But the name of the issue is Gifted, illustrated by Guillaume March, who is changing up his style a bit. It's not as pretty or polished as I'm used to, but it's still it works here. It's a bit more looser than what I tend to see by the man. Arif Prianto on colors, Clayton Cowles on letters. But we kind of just start off with, the first page is definitely not going to be, it's not going to win any awards from Vince, because the first page is just nonstop repeat panels. So, but of course, it's also to show time passing or travel. Diana gets to where we got to go, and we're kind of playing it for laughs almost at the start, because of, we all know how much fun it is to park at a mall, and if you're Jerry Seinfeld, how much fun it is to look for your car at the end of a shopping day at the mall. But you have some funny moments as far as like at the at Earthbucks, aka Starbucks, with misspelling Superman's name. So we're going for that easy laugh. But Clark is also trying to let Diana know that she can depend on him. He's there for her. He knows the tying it back to the main story in the book, and what she's facing, and she's really not having it. This is her battle. She's really adamant about that, not just obviously with Clark, but with her sisters in previous issues. There's someone else at the mall who's trying to buy kryptonite because he wants to kill Superman. That gets handled pretty easily. They go to see a movie while they're at the mall, and it's in 5D, so it's just basically nothing but Mixopitalix on the screen. They finally decide on what to give Bruce, which was kind of made it for me. I thought overall the issue was really well done. It's absolutely one of my favorite single issues in recent memory. It's on the list now. It's kind of the thing that other one shots or single issues will have to compete against before the end of the year, before we get to our award show. But I absolutely thought this issue just it really hit the spot. Whether it was whatever kind of day you're having, whatever you're reading with your other, whatever other comics you're reading, this was I'm not going to call it a palate cleanser, but it is. It just reminds me that Tom is good at what he does, and in his hands, some characters just sing. And this was an issue that I think is, I'm not gonna say hard to top, but it is. It really hit me in a certain way, and whether that's because of what Alan and Dave did in that Superman annual back in the 80s. Whether it's just the way I'm feeling right now as I'm getting older, whether it's just these characters, it's like a perfect storm. There's just a whole mess going on in these pages that just make me really happy that this particular issue exist, and Tom got to tell it with some pretty pictures. So I definitely, like I said, it was meant to be my inner travels last week. Didn't want to just give it a quick little once over. I'm dancing around as I'm flipping through the pages now, because I know Caleb loved the issue, Haas did as well, and I think even if you're not reading Wonder Woman in general, or you haven't read it since Perez or Azzarello and Chang, this is a nice little done in one issue. I would definitely recommend someone checking out. But yeah, I thought I really, really enjoyed this issue.
Nice. Jason, you read it, right?
I did, yeah. And the thing is, you know, you bring up a good point, Dap, because hearing you talk about this, like, we all kind of think of Tom half-jokingly, you know, saying he's the king of the 12-issue run because that's his preferred format. But some of his most memorable stuff have been one single issues as well. You know, he is very good at telling these standalone issues that serve as an aside, kind of a breakup of a longer arc, or I think probably in many cases just to let the main artist catch up or take a break. And when I opened up the book, like the first page, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Because, you know, like you said, we're in the midst of this, I think, really awesome build where it's basically going to be Wonder Woman against the world. And it's been a pretty, you know, it's a serious main plot. There's been some lighter moments like of interaction, but and then all of a sudden I open up, I'm like, this doesn't have it. And then I realized it was a fill-in instantly, and then I thought, ugh, because I think for me sometimes that can feel like a whiff, especially if it takes depending if it's a fill-in artist that you don't like as much. But to your point, I mean, this was so well done. And you know, I don't have the same nostalgic pull for the Trinity that you do, but this was clever as can be. And like you said, I think it's similar to the issue where he did with, you know, where they're going on the double date, you know, remember?
Yes, that's his, yeah. And even though you mentioned the single issue, that's another short story. I mean, it's a two-parter, yeah, but that's another two-parter issue where it's just like, yeah, it's perfect. It's just everything you need within those two issues about these four characters.
Clever little human moments that speak to their being friends and being able to poke fun at each other, and it's just the right balance. Like I said, I don't know that I'd want to read a 20 issue arc where
my
top superheroes are all like having sort of these slice of life conversations, right? But every now and then seeing it, it's evocative to me. I mean, I guess my analog to this when I was first getting into comics would be the X-Men issues where they're hanging out at the pool or playing volleyball or something, like something completely random because they just saved the universe, you know, over the last 8 issues and they got to take a break. And it was just, it's fun sometimes to be reminded that these characters do have, even though we rarely, if ever, see it, they aren't fighting to save the world every second of every day, right? They do have a little bit of downtime at least.
Yes.
There you go. Awesome.
You didn't tell us what you thought of this.
I didn't read it. Did not read it. But hey, we hope you come back next time because we got more of this going on. If you want to save big on OGNs, trade paperbacks, manga, omnibus editions, all that stuff, and 50% off a whole bunch of Marvel books, go to cheapgraphicnovels.com. Cheapgraphicnovels.com. Everything you want at the price you want to pay. And check out the Patreon page, patreon.com/11oclockcomics. Massive changes, all of them good. We're Slack-based now, so we have 2 tiers. $5 gets you an extra episode every month, 2+ hours. $10 gets you the bonus episode and access to the Slack. And the world of comics opens wide for you. Vintage fanzine downloads, pages a day, artist spotlights, an image every day from a chosen artist each month. We have camaraderie and talk about movies and TV and books. There's a book club within our Slack that meet periodically and talk about the book that they read. It's amazing. It's just a whole bunch of friends having a whole bunch of fun. So patreon.com/11oclockcomics. In your damn travels. I talked up the first volume of this at length. I will not do so for the second, but hashtag Dracul, which is hashtag DRCL, Midnight Children, Volume 2, just came out. And a more stunning presentation you will not find on the stands. This art by Shinichi Sakamoto, who also adapted it. It's a, in case you didn't hear the first part, it's a retelling or a reimagining of Bram Stoker's Dracula with gender malleability built in. And it focuses on the way women are denigrated in society and looked at as second or third class citizens. Their opinions don't mean much, and their presence is unwanted unless somebody's got a need to fulfill, in other words. It also deals a lot with the fluidity of gender. For example, Lucy Westenra in the classic Bram Stoker work is a boy in this named Luke, who has a propensity at night to adjust their appearance to be not unlike that of a beautiful young lady. Of course, Dracula enters the picture in this one, and Mina, who is cast off because she's the only girl in a British boys' school, and the school is specifically designed to groom young men for service to the crown in roles of leadership. So what is this girl doing there? And they all hate her because she's a girl, but she can, like I said before, she can carry herself very well. She's resourceful and energetic and smart, everything they don't want her to be. And Adam Van Helsing enters the picture in this volume, and it is gut-wrenching. I don't want to get into any of it because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But without even entering the frame or the panel until two-thirds of the book, Dracula is an absolute bastard. And we know that, right? Because of the novel. But I think in a lot of adaptations, he's just a monster. But in this one, he's a cunning, deceitful, bloodthirsty, of course, downright bastard. And he's a great, great villain in the hands of Sakamoto. Like, this book is meticulous. It's intricate. The art is just so elegant and disturbing at the same time. It is a wonderful, wonderful work. It's a little pricey, though. It's from Viz, and it's a signature edition. Every volume is $27. But it's well worth it. They're hardcovers, of course. Well worth the money. So if you're, and I don't think this is one that ran for a very long time. Like, I would be surprised if we get 5 volumes out of this. But I haven't done any research, so what the hell do I know? So just check it out. Dracul. It's Dracula without the vowels. Hashtag DRCL. Midnight Children, Volume 2. It is absolutely amazing. Go get it.
In your travels, I did read the third issue of Pine and Merrimack. I'm not going to go too far into it, except that we do get a little bit of our heroines of Linnea's days as a detective. A police detective, and kind of see a little bit of why she is the way she is, and that how she became the woman that she is. There's, again, like the earlier comic I mentioned, there are some tender moments between our main characters here, as well as a lot of furries, And there's the plot thickens. I will say that this the art continues to be amazing by Fran Gallant, and again it's written by Kyle Starks, a letter by Pat Brusseau. It is from Boom Studios. This is one book where I don't spend any time guessing where it's going. I have faith in Kyle, kind of like I did with I Hate This Place or pretty much anything he writes. I trust him. I'm along for the ride. Wherever we're going is where we're going. I don't need to jump ahead of him. I don't need to figure out anything. I don't need to worry about if where things are all going to add up and where all the avenues are going to meet. I'm enjoying the story, and that's exactly what I'm doing here. This is nuts. The first issue may have been, kind of calmer, at least setting things up, and the second issue dialed the nutty up just a tad, but this one is really kind of taking it. It looks like it could be taking it to a new level. But yeah, I thought it was a great issue. Just another issue of a great series. In Your Travels, Pioneer Merrimack number 3.
Nice. I love that book.
Yeah.
So In Your Travels, I want to talk about Brian K. Vaughan for two reasons. One, while I was on vacay, I reread for the third time all of Saga. This time 66 issues. I had read the first 60 and was saving this last arc to read when I had the chance. And then I thought, you know what? I'm just going to got a long flight, got a 9-hour flight. Let me go back on that journey. And so I reread the whole thing, and it's just impeccable. And the thing that's fascinating to me is that we're 66 issues into this thing, and there's been very little development of where I think you think it's going to go in the first issue or two, which is that you meet this little girl, and she's obviously the offspring of two warring worlds with different species. And you think, okay, and the she's narrating as an adult to you about what had, in the past tense. And you think, okay, as this story goes on, we're going to see her get older and older until she's a grown woman. And she's going to be this Princess Leia level important character in some kind of major upheaval of this universe. If that's where we're going, then they must be planning for like a 3,000 issue book, because this is still, we're 66 issues in, and the main characters are only a few years older than they were when we first met them. And I find that fascinating. I really do. It's really one of the main draws for me now. It's like that they have decided to take this, I think, much more measured character-driven approach to these specific people without giving you the carrot of why, if ever, they're globally or intergalactically important. And it's just amazing stuff. Not that I need to sell people on Saga, but and then the other reason I wanted to mention is that I also read the first 150 strips of Spectators, which is Brian K. Vaughan and Nico Henrichsen's webcomic that is distributed at least primarily through Brian's Substack. And this has been billed as a very adult, edgy, erotic comic. And I got to be honest, like I said, I read 150 of the strips, and it's going to go to 300. I think they're in like the 180s, 190s right now. But it's pretty light, man. On like, you tell me it's going to be no holds barred erotica, I need to see more. I don't know. Like, there's a few moments of like graphic sexuality over the book, but most of it is about the protagonist who's dead. There's spoilers, I guess. Floating around, kind of like, seeing the world and from an outside venue, like seeing what's happening, commenting on it with her and other spirits. And it's like, it's cool, I guess, but I expected it to be much edgier or certainly more sexual than it is. So, and lukewarm recommendation for Spectators, but don't bother even thinking about reading Spectators if you haven't read all of Saga.
Let it be known.
Yeah.
All right, people. Thank you for being here with us. Once again, we hope you come back next time, because we'll be waiting here. What else do we have to do? and get yourselves to a comic shop and buy a whole bunch of books and read them and love them and talk about them and then come back because you need to say goodnight. No more sounds at the end of the episodes. You can't do it without the PC. PC's dead. Yeah, with the Mac, I can play them through the Mac, but Audio Hijack won't capture them, so it would be for naught. David.
Good night.
End of an era. Hope you love it. Change is bad.
That is a shame. Well.
Unless I get it on my phone or something, then that'll work. We'll think about it. All right, everybody. Yeah, my little... Well, I have your bottle, so yeah. Everybody, hey, we love you. Tell them exactly that.
Oh, we do love you.
Exactly that.
That's me, the Heart Grow Fonder.
It does.
That's it for that one.